This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Ivy Aberdeen's Letter to the World, written by Ashley Herring Blake, read by Chloe Cannon. This one is for me. This is my letter to the world that never wrote to me. Emily Dickinson. Chapter 1. Stormy. A storm was coming, which was perfect. Thunder rumbled through the night, rattling Ivy Aberdeen's bedroom windows and making a beautiful racket. She smiled and counted, only making it to 2 before lightning washed her room white. Ivy didn't know why people colored bolts of lightning yellow in drawings. They were silvery blue and made her think of whispers and magic, the perfect setting for what Ivy was about to do. She adjusted the headlamp around her forehead, the thick elastic band pulling at her hair. On her nightstand, her clock glowed green, the numbers already inching toward the time she had to get up for school. But she had a good hour at least. She rubbed the sleep from her eyes, and the tiny headlamp shined a yellow circle onto the notebook in her lap. She called it a notebook because there wasn't a better word for it. She could call it a journal, but that didn't feel right either. The book was more like a portable, papery hope chest. Mom stored Ivy's great-grandmother's hope chest up here, in the attic, which became Ivy's room a few months ago so the twins could have their own space. It sat at the end of her bed and smelled like cedar and old stuff. Inside, ancient pictures and clothes and knick-knacks were tucked away like secrets. There was even an old wedding dress in there, which Ivy thought was sort of creepy. When she asked about it, her mom told her that way back when, a hope chest was where a girl collected things she would need when she got married, hoping for the right boy to come along so her real life could start. Then her mother went on and on about how marriage had nothing to do with a girl's real life, and how Ivy should hope for lots of different things, not just a boy, which was a relief. She kept her real dreams in a notebook, where everything was a complete secret. Her hope chest was securely hidden away and guarded. Ivy aimed the headlamp's beam at the purple and white cover of her notebook. It was one of those decomposition notebooks, and she got it from her language arts teacher at school. She liked thinking about her notebook like that. Decomposition. That's what it felt like to her anyway. Taking things apart in her head and putting them down on paper so she could figure out how they worked. Outside, the thunder and lightning snapped right alongside each other. Perfect secret drawing weather. Ivy flipped through the crinkly pages and caught a glimpse of a drawing she'd abandoned a few months ago as a hopeless case. She narrowed her eyes and glared at her family sitting on the grass in a large field. The grass in this field wasn't green. It was silver and pink with a border of blue-leafed trees. There were Mom and Dad, their eyes shining and their mouths happy, holding Ivy's new twin brothers, Aaron and Evan, in their arms. Her 16-year-old sister, Layla, was right where she should be, sitting between their parents, grinning at Evan while Aaron wrapped his tiny hand around her finger. Ivy scanned the page for inspiration. There was one person missing from this family portrait, and she couldn't figure out where to put her. Where to put Ivy? She glowered at the picture and flicked the page over so hard it tore right out of the notebook. She nearly balled it up and tossed it toward her garbage can, which was already overflowing with other drawings gone awry. But it felt weird to throw away a picture of her family, even if she wasn't in it. Instead, she folded it up and stuffed it into her swirly blue pillowcase. It wasn't the picture for a night like this, anyway. This night needed one of her stormy pictures, like the one she was so close to showing Layla just a couple of weeks ago, the one she wouldn't ever, ever show her now. She found the most recent drawing she'd been working on. There were dozens just like it in her notebook. Each one had some sort of house snuggled up in the branches of blue trees, trees on fire, trees made of gold, trees under the ocean, and trees at the tippy top of the highest mountain. All of them had a girl with curly hair inside the house. And she wasn't alone. Another girl was in there with her. Sometimes they were standing, looking out at flame-colored hills in the distance. Sometimes they were lying down, tucked into sleeping bags that glowed because they were covered with tiny fireflies, like 100 little nightlights. Sometimes they were reading, or, like this one, facing each other and smiling. Ivy didn't know who the girl was, but she wasn't Layla, and she wasn't her best friend Taryn, or any of the other girls at school who lately only wanted to talk about boys. Ivy was 12 years old and had never had a crush on a boy before. But maybe she just hadn't met one she liked. Or maybe she couldn't even get crushes. That was her. Uncrushable Ivy. But that didn't feel right either, so really Ivy had no idea what she thought about crushes at all. Which was exactly why the thunder outside was perfect for this picture. When Ivy looked at it, she felt a storm in her stomach. She felt a storm in her head. She felt a storm fizzing into her fingertips and toes. Because in every single picture Ivy drew, she and that girl were holding hands. And they weren't holding hands like she and Layla used to hold hands when they ran down the street to play in the park. It wasn't the way she and Taryn used to hold hands when they ran through the sprinkler in Ivy's backyard, before Taryn got too cool to run through sprinklers and Ivy told her she was too cool for sprinklers too. Ivy stared at the picture, chewing on her lower lip. Maybe she should rip them all out, starting with this one. She liked storms, but storms could be dangerous. And if Ivy had shown one of her stormy pictures to Layla, maybe her sister would have looked at her like she was weird. She should definitely rip them all out. Her hands shook as she closed her fingers around the top edge of the paper, ready to tear. But she couldn't do it. Her hand wouldn't move that way. Instead, she swallowed the giant balloon in her throat and picked up her indigo blue brush pen. While the real rain lashed at her window, she slipped some inky rain in between the drawn branches and leaves. She used her Arctic blue pen to zigzag in some lightning. She filled the sky with rolling silver clouds. Before she could change her mind, Ivy colored in the girls. She used her lightest pink marker for her own hair, the color of sweet and fluffy cotton candy. In real life, Ivy's hair was strawberry blonde, with frizzy curls her mother used to braid into smooth plaits. Lately, Mom never had time to do that, and Ivy certainly didn't want Layla to do it. So now her hair was a coiling mane of wildness all the time. But in Ivy's notebook, her hair was a soft and pretty pink, her curls always silky. Ivy gave the other girl dark hair, the color of a raven's sleek feathers. She had dark eyes, too, so dark blue they nearly matched the chaos of the sky. Both girls were happy inside that treehouse, their secret small and safe. Ivy wished she was there right now. It sounded like a wild adventure sitting in that treehouse while the sky fell down around them. Color filled up the page, and when Ivy was done, she sat back against her pillows. Her heart galloped in her chest, and she was out of breath like she'd just finished the mile run at school. It felt like the whole sky was inside her body. But she liked her picture. She might have even loved it. That was when she noticed how quiet it was outside. Not the storm was over kind of quiet. A creepy kind of quiet. The kind of quiet that made all the tiny hairs on her arms stick straight up. Then, a few things happened at once. One, the storm sirens in town went off, slicing through the quiet like an angry ghost. Two, Ivy's bedroom door flew open and her dad stumbled in, his eyes the size of dinner plates as the beam from her headlamp hit him in the face. She slapped her notebook shut.
Ivy, let's go, honey.
He held out his hand, and his voice was calm, like it was when he told her she had to get 3 teeth pulled at the dentist last year. Which is to say, not very calm at all. Fake calm.
What?
There's a tornado nearby, sweetie. No time to talk. We need to get to the storm cellar.
She kicked off her comforter and stuffed her notebook into her pillowcase, hugging it to her chest. She yanked off her headlamp just as Dad crossed the tiny room in two strides and grabbed her by the arm. Not hard enough to hurt, but hard enough to scare her. He pulled her toward the door just as the freakiest sound Ivy had ever heard loomed over the siren. It sounded like a train. It grew louder and louder. A locomotive that couldn't possibly exist out here in her family's little part of rural Georgia. Just as Ivy and her dad reached the top of the narrow attic stairs, a third thing happened. Ivy's window exploded, spraying glass all over her bed and bringing the sky with it. Chapter 2. Torn Away. Ivy's father never cursed, so when every bad word in the book flew out of his mouth, panic rose in Ivy's throat. She whimpered like a scared animal and nearly tripped over a pile of old clothes. On her bed, her headlamp was still switched on, its light glinting off the glass scattered over her ruined sky-blue comforter. Her gauzy curtains were torn, wrapped around twigs and green-leafed branches. She got one last look at the mess before Dad yanked her in front of him and propelled her down the stairs to the second floor.
Daniel!
Ivy's mother screamed her dad's name from the first floor. She sounded more scared than Ivy had ever heard her.
Almost there, Elise.
Her dad was a big man, and he swooped Ivy into his arms, balancing her on his hip down the next flight of stairs. Mom and Layla waited at the bottom of the staircase near the front door. Mom had Evan strapped to her chest in the baby carrier, and Aaron wrapped in a soft yellow blanket in her arms. Layla gripped the baby bag, onesies and diapers overflowing. Everyone was breathing hard, and Aaron was wailing, his little three-month-old fingers grabbing at Mom's hair. Pale pastels in blurry lines. That's how Ivy would draw all of them right now, if she could. The train outside got louder and louder.
Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Ivy!
Mom gasped, reaching for Ivy with her free hand. Without a word, Layla stuffed red sneakers onto Ivy's feet.
I can put on my own shoes, Ivy snapped. Not when Dad's carrying you, you can't,
Layla said.
All right, let's go,
Dad said before Ivy could think of a good comeback. He nodded toward the door and Layla threw it open. Outside was a wild adventure, stuff full of wonder and excitement when they were bright colors in a drawing. But not the kind Ivy had ever wanted to experience in real life. The sound was painfully loud, that train huffing closer and closer. Underneath all that, there were snaps and cracks and slams. The air felt muggier than their normal southern Aprils. It was a choking kind of feeling, like the earth couldn't breathe. They spilled out the front door, Ivy's arms and legs still wrapped around her dad like a koala.
Go, go, go,
Dad said, nudging a frozen Layla with Ivy's foot.
But we can't see anything, Layla yelled over the wind. What if it's out there?
The storm cellar's just around the corner of the house,
Dad yelled back.
We'll run, it'll be okay.
What if what's out there?
Ivy asked. She squinted through the dark, hoping for a train. A train would be so much better than what she knew was actually waiting for them.
A tornado, Ives,
Layla said, like she thought Ivy really didn't know.
At least let Layla take,
Dad started. But Mom cut him off.
I've got them. We need to go now.
Dad pressed his mouth flat, but nodded. His arms tightened around Ivy, his eyes never leaving Mom.
On three, girls. One, two, three.
They leaped off the porch. The world flew around them like something out of The Wizard of Oz. Tree limbs blew through the air as if they were nothing but tissue paper, while bits of dirt and pebbles stung Ivy's face. Her hair floated upward as though she were underwater. Layla's old bike was in the grass near their gray minivan, the handlebars twisted the wrong way. Ivy saw their mailbox, the Aberdeens, written in curvy script, dented and on its side near the big oak tree. The trunk of a pear tree was broken in two, its bottom half like bony fingers reaching for the sky. Ivy had no idea where the top half was. She didn't think she wanted to know. Dad ran, one hand cradling Ivy's head. The rain soaked through Ivy's t-shirt and plaid pajama pants. She squeezed her eyes shut, hoping that when she opened them again, she'd be in her bed, drawing secret pictures that scared her. That kind of scary was a lot better than this kind.
Daddy!
Layla screamed from behind them. Ivy's dad whirled around so fast she saw spots.
No,
he said. Ivy could barely hear him over the wind's fierce roar, and he set her on her feet.
Keep running for the cellar, Ivy.
But
go.
He took off, back toward the house. Ivy saw Layla hovering over their mom, who was on her knees in the yard, screaming and trying to wrap Aaron back in her arms. He flailed on the grass, but his cries were swallowed up by the storm. After months of wishing he'd be quiet, Ivy would give anything to hear him screaming right now. Dad scooped Aaron up while Layla helped Mom. She was gripping Evan's bald head and crying. Layla was crying, and Dad was crying, and Ivy was crying. The whole world was crying as everything fell apart. Dad pushed Layla forward, and she fought the wind to get to Ivy, while Mom and Dad struggled behind. Ivy couldn't see anyone clearly. They were covered in whirling hair and earth and sky. Ivy knew she should move, dive into the shelter that would tuck her underground, but she couldn't go in there alone.
Ivy, go!
Layla yelled, her chestnut hair sticking to her face. Hail the size of golf balls fell from the sky, and Layla screamed, covering her head. When her sister reached her, Ivy wrapped her arms around Layla's waist, her pillow sopping wet and smushed between them. They dragged themselves to the cellar, which was nothing more than a dirt room underground, built a century ago to store canned goods and potatoes. The entrance was a wooden door in the grass, and it shook and rattled against Ivy's palm as she wrapped her fingers around the handle. Before she could get it open, a horrible screeching sound exploded behind them. Layla and Ivy turned in time to see their van lifted off the ground. It spun, and the metal crumpled, and then the whole thing disappeared into... nothing. There was nothing there. Ivy scrunched up her eyes, trying to see. But when she did, she wished she hadn't. Because there was something there. It was dark and huge and swirling, and it wanted to eat Ivy's whole world. If she drew it, she'd use nothing but dark charcoals and twisting lines that fell off the page.
Inside, girls!
Dad yelled as he and Mom rushed up next to them. Ivy yanked on the door, and it yawned open, revealing a little staircase descending into the dark. She went down first, but her ankle twisted on the last step, sending her sprawling over the dirt floor. Through the pillowcase, the corner of her notebook dug into her ribs.
Move over, Ivy!
Layla screeched. Ivy scrambled up, her ankle screaming at her as she scurried into a corner so Mom and Dad could get into the cellar. Dad set Aaron into Layla's arms before he ran back to shut the door. Ivy hugged her pillow to her chest, catching one more glimpse of that huge nothing looming up in front of her father. Then the door slammed shut, and everything went dark. Chapter 3. Undone. Ivy used to think this cellar was magical. Back when Layla was a person she could trust, they'd open the cellar door and stretch out on the grass near the opening and make up stories about what was hiding down there in the dark. They weren't allowed to go in. Mom was worried that the door would close on them and get stuck, and that no one would know where they were for hours and hours. Ivy remembered arguing with her, telling her that being trapped in a dark dungeon would be an adventure. Well, it wasn't. It was damp and smelled like dirt and rotten potatoes, and Ivy's clothes were soaked. And she couldn't stop seeing that nothing swirling closer and closer. Who knew adventures could be so terrifying? Above them, the door rattled and the sky roared. It wasn't a beautiful sound. It was ugly and had teeth behind it as the train chugged on and on. Ivy didn't know what it was running over and crashing into and ripping apart. She didn't want to know. She just wanted to go back to bed. She wanted her treehouse on top of a mountain. Next to her, she thought Dad was holding Aaron again. She couldn't really see anything, but she heard him singing softly to keep her baby brother calm. Somewhere in the dark, Mom probably had her nose smushed against Evan's head. Her headlamp, abandoned on her glass-covered bed, sure would have come in handy right now. Layla fumbled for Ivy's hand. Ivy grabbed on, and she was so relieved that tears stung her eyes.
Ivy,
her sister said, squeezing her hand even tighter.
Yeah?
Ivy's voice sounded tiny, and she could barely hear herself over the noise outside.
Should we make this a Harriet story?
Maybe it's not really a tornado. Maybe it's really the magical north wind come to transform us into... Layla's words trailed off like she was waiting for Ivy to fill in the next line. They used to make up stories all the time. Mom had written and illustrated the Harriet Honeywell books, a chapter book series, for the past 4 years. She would always brainstorm with Ivy and Layla, letting them spill all their ideas into her lap. The first book was even dedicated to my brilliant girls, without whom Harriet would never have been born. Stories, written and drawn, were in the Aberdeen girls' blood. But Ivy didn't want to make up stories with Layla anymore.
This isn't some fairy tale, Ivy said after a few seconds. This is serious.
She pulled her hand away from her sister's, thinking she'd feel triumphant and grown up. Really, Ivy just felt lost. She laced her own fingers together and squeezed. But it wasn't the same as Layla's hand in hers.
I know it's serious, Ives.
Layla sounded exasperated and hurt, and it made Ivy's stomach feel sour. She never talked to Layla like that. She knew she sounded like Mom when they used to get in trouble for playing hangman during church. Ivy didn't know how to be around her older sister anymore. Not since Layla and Gigi stopped being friends.
This'll be over soon, Dad said. Then we'll go back to...
But he never got to say whatever they might have gone back to because the loudest sound Ivy had ever heard exploded outside.
A crunch, and a smash, and a crumble, and a boom.
Ivy clapped her hands over her ears and colored the sounds in her head. Carbon black and clear glass, the deep russet of their front porch. Squeezing her eyes closed, she shook her head, her hair tickling her arms. Those colors were scary, so she brushed them over with fuchsia starbursts and flowers with cobalt stems, and a house nestled among gold and emerald-striped branches. She made a whole new and beautiful world, even as she worried that her own world was coming undone. Chapter 4. Gone. It was over in a blink. All that noise, turning into an eerie silence. Ivy's lungs seemed to have stopped working, and she knocked a fist against her chest to get them started again.
Dad, Layla whispered, what was all that?
I don't know,
he said. His breathing must have just started up again, too, because it sounded raspy and quick. They sat for another few minutes, but it felt like 5 hours. Mom was totally silent, invisible in the dark. Ivy wanted to crawl into her lap, but her lap was pretty full with Ivy's baby brother right now, just like it always was.
Is it over?
Ivy asked.
I think so,
Dad said.
Stay here. Let me check.
Ivy heard rustling as her dad stood up. Aaron squawked a little, and Layla shifted next to Ivy, so she knew her sister was holding him now. No one spoke, and Ivy was sure they all held their breath while the cellar door squeaked open. The storm siren got louder. It was barely any lighter outside, but Ivy made out Dad's silhouette against the greenish-black sky. He climbed the steps, but stopped when his shoulders were out, and pressed his fingers into the grass. His head turned this way and that. The storm siren wound down like a balloon deflating on a slow leak. Ivy waited for a sigh of relief, a laugh, anything to tell them it was okay. But none of that happened. In fact, a whole lot of nothing happened. Dad stood frozen on the third-to-top step, staring in the direction of their house.
Dad?
Ivy asked. Mom shushed her. Dad stayed on the steps, but tangled both his hands in his dark hair.
Dad?
Layla asked.
No one shushed her. He didn't move, his hands still on top of his head.
Daniel!
Mom's voice seemed to snap him out of it. He released a huge sigh and turned, his eyes roaming over Ivy and Layla until they landed on Mom. Then he said a silly thing, a wild thing, an impossible thing.
It's gone. Everything. It's all gone.
Chapter 5. Rubble. Gone was not a word Ivy thought she would ever use to describe a house. A person, maybe. Summer vacation. The last of the chocolate cake. But not a house. And certainly not her house. Dad was the funny one in their family, always trying to get her more serious mother to laugh. He called it his mission in life, to make his girls smile. So Ivy really hoped that was what he was doing when he said, gone. It's gone. Everything. It's all gone. Possible translation. That rickety shutter on the living room window that always smacked against the house whenever the wind blew was gone. Then they'd all laugh over how Mom couldn't nag him anymore about replacing it. But Ivy didn't think he was trying to be funny this time. He wasn't laughing. He wasn't grinning in that way that made the corners of his eyes wrinkle up. Slowly, silently, her family climbed out of the cellar. Ivy was the last one. No one helped her, and her ankle ached, protesting her weight. She could already feel it swelling against the top of her shoe. She hugged her damp pillow and limped over to where her family stood, staring at the house. Or at least, where the house used to be. Her dad was right. Gone was the perfect word to describe what Ivy was seeing right now. Because there was nothing there. Nothing house-shaped, anyway. Just rubble. Just a mess. Just wood, and that pink insulation stuff, and tiles and clothes and food. All the colors of their world thrown together like a giant had had a temper tantrum. The stone porch steps were still there, right where they should be. So was the back wall of the sunroom, and part of a wall in the dining room with its rosebud wallpaper. Other than that, nothing. Even the brick chimney was crumbled, a pile of rust red and gray. Behind it, the sky was starting to lighten into a pale lavender, the clouds almost soft-looking now. The whole storm was here and then gone, just like their house. Ivy craned her head up, 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 to where her little attic room should be. There was nothing but a pinking sky. Some of the trees were cut in half, as though a huge pair of pliers had snipped off the tops. It was impossible to tell if any of the other houses around them had been hit, too. The Aberdeen house sat on 2 acres of land. Their closest neighbor was Ms. Clement, a nice old lady with dyed red hair who always slipped Ivy a butterscotch candy whenever they ran into her in town. And she lived about a quarter mile away.
Oh my God,
Layla said, and Aaron squirmed against her chest.
Oh my God, oh my God.
Okay, let's not panic,
Dad said. That was his favorite phrase. Let's not panic. When Mom's blood pressure got really high near the end of her pregnancy. Let's not panic when Aaron wouldn't stay asleep for more than 30 minutes at a time during the night. Let's not panic when Mom had to push back the next Harriet book deadline because she was so tired she couldn't think straight.
This is the perfect time to panic, Dad, Layla screeched. We have no house! Where is our house?
Panicking won't make our house come back, Ivy said, even though she kind of agreed with Layla. Panicking seemed like the perfect thing to do. Layla glared at Ivy, but Dad just kept staring at the yawning pile of junk where their house once stood. Mom stared too, her mouth hanging open. Even like this, with her light red hair a mess and her nightgown all covered in dirt, she was pretty. Ivy felt a little twinge of longing for her mom to look at her and tell her it was okay, but she was quiet. Everyone was. Ivy looked away, back into the sky.
Did anyone grab their cell phone?
Dad asked. No one answered,
Ivy didn't even have a cell phone. 13 was when Layla got hers, Mom and Dad said. And 13 was when Ivy would get one, too. But now, no one had anything except Aaron and Evan's diaper bag.
Is everyone all right? Mom asked. Layla?
She turned and ran her eyes over Layla's form.
I mean, my body is fine if that's what you're talking about, Layla said.
Ivy? Mom asked wearily. Ivy thought of her ankle and nodded. It was no big deal, not compared to their pile of a house. Mom let out a breath before she started checking the twins for marks or bruises, lifting their arms and inspecting their feet.
Here's what we're going to do, Mom said when she seemed satisfied that no one was hurt. All their heads snapped toward her.
She'd always been the captain of their ship. We're going to go through the house, the mess, and see what we can find that we can use. Look for clothes and food, only what we actually need.
She looked around their yard and pointed to a pile of blue plastic near the oak tree that must have blown out of the old barn. Branches and leaves covered its surface.
Layla, go shake out that tarp and we'll put everything we find over there.
Hang on, I don't want the girls near the house,
Dad said.
There might be some electrical issues, maybe even a gas leak or something.
Oh, Mom said, deflating. I didn't think about that.
We can still walk around the outside of the...
He frowned, and his bottom lip actually wobbled as he waved toward the pile that used to be where they lived. His hand trembled.
See what we can find there.
Okay. Mom rounded her shoulders back gently, trying not to wake Evan. Ivy couldn't believe he could sleep through all this. Yes, let's do that.
Why don't you go sit down with the boys, Elise?
I can help. I'll put Aaron on my back. Where's the other carrier? She clapped a hand over her mouth. Tears welled in her eyes, but she squeezed them away before they could slip down her cheeks. The other carrier, along with everything else they owned, was certainly nowhere to be found.
This can't be happening, Mom whispered. I can't believe this is happening.
Dad took Aaron from Layla and walked with Mom over to the tarp. He kept blinking and shaking his head, opening his mouth for words that never came. Ivy and Layla shook out the tarp, and then Mom sat down, her back against the oak tree. Ivy gave her the pillow to use however she needed, but she barely looked at Ivy, mumbling a thanks. Instead of springing into action, they all sank down next to Mom. Ivy folded her legs and stared at her lap for a few seconds. She didn't want to look at their ruined house, but it was hard not to. It was like a wreck on the side of the road. It tugged at her eyes like a magnet. She wasn't sure how long they stayed like that. She felt like crying, except that no one else was crying and she didn't want to cry alone. Plus, tears wouldn't help. They'd only make everyone feel worse, adding a whiny cherry to the top of this horrible sundae. So she stuffed her tears down, all the way down to her toes. It was easy, something she'd gotten used to doing in front of her family for the past year. It had been her job to keep Mom relaxed while she was pregnant, and worry-free after the twins were born. Ivy stood up and limped over to the remains of their house. Her ankle throbbed, but she kept going. The air was damp and quiet, and had a hint of that clean green smell she used to love after spring rainstorms. Except now it was mixed with wood and metal, and a sort of cloudy scent, like spring had caught a cold. Her eyes skittered through the mess for something familiar, any clue about where her room might have landed.
What a ridiculous idea. Where her room might have landed.
A hysterical laugh bubbled into Ivy's throat, but she forced it down. No one would understand why a laugh was the best thing right now. Much better than all this silence. Finally, she saw something. The blue comforter from her bed. Maybe her bedside table wasn't too far off.
Ivy, what are you doing?
Just looking,
Ivy said, but she stepped on the rubble, right where it started arcing up into a little hill.
Ivy, stop,
Dad said, but Ivy took another step.
Ivy, Elizabeth,
Mom yelled.
I just need to find something,
Ivy called back.
Find what? Layla said. We need to find everything.
Ivy moved forward a bit more, inching here and there to avoid the gaping holes between planks of wood and broken furniture. She tried not to think about how she was stepping all over their house, all over her entire life. She set her bad ankle on the edge of what looked like the bathroom sink she and Layla shared. The chrome faucet was still flecked with dried toothpaste. Before she could go any farther, someone lifted her by her armpits.
"I told you to stop,"
Dad said, setting Ivy on her feet in front of the tarp.
"Could be dangerous."
"I just needed my..."
"What, your stupid brush pans?"
Ivy looked down, biting her lip so she didn't cry.
"Oh my God, that's it," Layla asked. "You're worried about your pins right now?"
"Layla, easy," Mom said softly, but Ivy didn't think her sister heard.
"I mean, really, Ivy?" Layla said. "Look around you."
Ivy didn't look around her. She didn't look at anything except her dirty red sneakers, her swelling ankle. She knew it was silly to worry about her pens right now, but she couldn't help it. They were nice pens, artist quality, and fancy. You could refill the ink and replace the nibs, and they came with a blender pen. They cost $110 for a pack of 36 colors. Ivy saved her allowance for 7 months to buy them. Plus, they were hers. Her tools to create, well, her whole world.
This one certainly wasn't real anymore, if it ever was.
Ivy finally glanced up at her sister, but Layla was no longer looking at her. She was looking at the house, and tears were finally spilling out of her eyes. Ivy took a step forward because Layla was still her sister, and sisters needed each other when things like this happened. But just when Ivy lifted her arms to hug her, Layla turned and collapsed next to Mom. She buried her face in Mom's lap, her shoulders shaking silently. Mom had Aaron in her lap now, too, but she managed to smooth her fingers through Layla's hair, murmuring to her softly. Ivy stood and watched. And then she stood and not watched, because looking at her family felt really lonely right now. Dad was next to her, but he was staring at the house, his hands on his hips. Every few breaths, he let out a gigantic sigh, over and over again. Ivy thought about offering to go to Ms. Clement's house, or maybe the Vance family on the other side of the woods, but she didn't want to go alone. She wasn't even sure she could go alone with her ankle hurting the way it was.
"What do we do now?"
she asked, hoping her dad would know. He had to know. Someone had to know. But he didn't answer, and when Ivy looked up at him, a few tears made their way down his dirt-streaked cheek. Chapter 6. Rescued. The sun rose higher and higher, burning away the leftover clouds, and the sky went from lavender to too bright blue.
"Dad?"
Ivy slipped her hand into her father's.
"Daddy?"
Finally, he blinked and took a shaky breath. He squeezed her hand once, and then let her go, wiping his face on the crook of his arm.
"We need to call for some help,"
he said, turning back to Mom and Layla.
"I'm going to head over to Ms. Clements, make sure she's okay, and see if we could use her phone."
"I'll come with you,"
Ivy said, desperate for something to do.
"No, sweetie, you stay here,"
he said.
"Please, I can help."
"Ivy, do what Dad says,"
Layla snapped. Ivy scowled at Layla but didn't say anything. She turned away and sat under the oak tree. Dad had just started jogging toward Ms. Clements' house when something rumbled from the driveway. Ivy looked up from where she was tearing leaves and gathering them into a little useless pile. Layla was still lying in their mother's lap, but she turned her head toward the noise. Dad stopped and turned back, running toward the big silver truck bouncing up the gravel driveway. The driver was Zandra Somerset, a doctor who'd moved to Helenwood last summer. She was Mom's doctor, which meant she was a woman's doctor. But Ivy couldn't remember what that was called right now. Her daughter, June, who was Ivy's age, sat in the passenger seat, gaping at Ivy's non-house. Another family, the Wayburns, who lived about 2 miles away and grew peaches, sat huddled in the bed of the truck. The youngest Wayburn, a toddler named Harris, wailed in his mother's lap. Dr. Somerset stopped near the oak tree and parked the truck. She stared at the house for a bit, too, then opened the door and got out. Ivy stood up and limped closer. "Hi, Daniel," Dr. Somerset said with a sigh. "Anyone hurt?" He shook his head.
"The Wayburns?"
Dad asked, waving weakly at a shocked-looking Graham Wayburn. "They're safe, but their house looks about like yours," Dr. Somerset said. Her eyes had dark circles under them, but Ivy remembered from the few checkups she went to with Mom that there was always a bit of a shadow there. Dad swore softly, rubbing the back of his neck.
"Do you know if Ms. Clement is okay?"
"She's fine. Missed her house completely. But it was bad, Daniel. The tornado went through downtown, too."
"Is anyone seriously hurt?"
"No fatalities reported yet, but there are a lot of injuries, some of them severe. June and I have been driving around trying to relieve the paramedics a bit and pick people up. Everyone who needs shelter is gathering at the elementary school."
"Right,"
Dad said, nodding at the ground.
"Shelter. Okay."
But he didn't move, just kept blinking at the wet grass. "Do you have a car?" Dr. Somerset asked. Dad frowned and looked around. "The van's gone," Ivy said when he kept staring at the spot where their only car used to be. "Right before Mom had the twins, their other car, an ancient CRV, broke down, and Ivy's parents had decided it wasn't worth fixing. It was only about a 20-minute walk into town, so they sold it to Trevor Kingston, who sold it for parts or something. Ivy thought they planned on getting Layla a car eventually, but eventually got swallowed up really fast by other stuff. And now this."
"Okay," Dr. Somerset said, nice and calm. "Are the twins all right?"
"I think so," Dad said. "Elise tripped on the way out of the house holding Aaron, but he was bundled up pretty tight. Could you check on him, though?"
"Of course." Dr. Somerset waved to June, who got out of the truck carrying a big gray messenger bag. She handed it to her mom and smiled at Ivy. It was a wobbly kind of smile, like she had no idea what to say, which was just fine with Ivy. She didn't know either. Dr. Somerset walked over to Mom and squatted down. Layla finally sat up.
"Have you nursed recently?"
Mom shook her head. "I need to."
Dr. Somerset dug a stethoscope out of her bag and checked both boys over. "They look just fine," she said, flipping the stethoscope behind her neck. "Let's get everyone into the truck." Ivy breathed a sigh of relief as her family started moving. At least one thing was fine. Her ankle ached, but there was no way she was mentioning it with everything else going on. She could walk. That's all that mattered. She took her pillow from her mom and ran her hands over the hard outline of the notebook inside. "Still safe."
"Wow," June said, standing next to Ivy. "This is awesome. I mean, just totally incredible."
Ivy turned toward her.
"Excuse me?"
June waved her hand at the heap of a house, her mouth open and eyes wide.
"Just look at it."
"Yeah, I can see it."
Ivy's voice snapped and popped, but she didn't care.
This was awesome? Was this girl serious?
"So, me losing my house is cool?"
June's dark eyes got even wider.
"No, no, when I said awesome, I meant like inspiring great awe. Daunting. Even fearsome that a cloud of wind could do all that. It's terrifying and awful."
Ivy blinked at her.
"Okay."
"I'm sorry," June said, looking down at her feet. "This always happens to me."
"What does?"
"My words, they sound right in my head, but when they come out of my mouth, it's not what I meant at all. My mom says I need to think before I speak."
She glanced back at Dr. Somerset, and something sad flickered in her eyes. But Ivy was too distracted by the word awesome to care what June might be talking about.
"I'm sorry about your house," June said. "Really."
Ivy blinked at her some more.
June was in Ivy's homeroom at school. Her pixie-cut hair was dark, and usually had a few little braids woven in somewhere. Ivy didn't know how she braided hair that short. June wore these cute dresses with leggings and talked a lot in class. Like, a lot. Sort of like the way she was babbling right now about awesome and daunting. And she always had the most bizarre lunches. Piles of vegetables and what looked like rice, but smaller. Ivy thought it was called quinoa or something, and it was always in a giant glass container with one of those rubber lids. Not that veggies were an odd choice, but that's all June ever ate. Ivy had never seen her with a juice box or a cookie. So, basically, June Somerset was weird. But Ivy was too scared about where her family was going to live, how they were going to live, to figure out anything else about June. So she just said, "Thanks," and followed her family to the truck. Chapter 7. Home for the Night. The truck bumped along the roads toward the elementary school, swerving around debris from the storm. As they headed into town, the houses got closer together, and the damage looked scarier. Huge tree branches lying on ripped-apart roofs, windows shattered, bikes and toys and trash scattered over lawns. A shredded tire lay in the middle of the road near Clayton Avenue. Mom and Layla sat in the back seat, each holding a twin, so June was next to Ivy in the truck bed, every movement knocking their shoulders together. Ivy crushed her pillow against her chest, tracing her finger over one corner of her notebook. The Wayburns' youngest kids still hadn't stopped crying, but Ivy didn't mind. She was actually sort of jealous that he could cry like that and didn't have to worry about making things worse for everyone else. "Are you okay?" June asked. "I don't know," Ivy said. June bunched her hands in the folds of her gray and white striped tunic dress. "I just thought I should ask because you don't look okay. But when I think about it, asking whether or not you're okay seems really stupid right now. Of course you're not okay." "No, I guess not." "It's okay to not be okay. Most people don't think so, but I do. It has to be okay to not be okay all the time, don't you think?" She was making Ivy dizzy. "It was so fast," Ivy said, as her little farm disappeared behind a hill. "One minute I was thinking about..." Ivy trailed off and gnawed on her lower lip. "What?" June whispered, leaning closer to Ivy. She smelled like oranges and clean clothes. Ivy probably smelled like dirt and more dirt. "Never mind," Ivy said, swallowing hard. Those few minutes before her dad busted into her room were like a dream, just like her two pictures of the girls in the treehouse, holding hands, thinking they were safe and on some adventure. But it ended up being a disaster. Ivy hugged her pillow tighter and shook off the thought. They pulled into Helenwood Elementary School's parking lot, already packed with cars. The building was made of red brick and two stories tall. Ivy had liked going to school there. It always seemed full of magic with its white columns on the front porch and tall flagpole. Now, though, it looked different. It was a shelter. Ivy was pretty sure she was going to hate this building forever, from here on out. They had to step around a lot of tree limbs on their way to the gym, but there didn't seem to be any more damage than that. The sky was still clearing, the clouds rolling back to reveal the blue underneath. Funny how that blue was always there, even when the rest of the earth was screaming and breaking into pieces. "You're limping," June whispered to Ivy as they made their way up the sidewalk toward the gym's main doors. Ivy shrugged and tried to even out her steps, but every time she pressed down on her foot too hard, tears bloomed in her eyes. She wiped them away and fell back behind her family so no one would see. Mom was already worried about the twins and the house, and Ivy didn't want Layla fussing over her. June slowed down to match Ivy's steps. Inside, the gym was chaos. There were at least 50 people, and all of them were wearing dirty pajamas and had the same shocked expression on their faces as Ivy's dad. Families grouped together, claiming spaces on the shiny lacquered floor. People like June and her mom. People with clean clothes and neat hair. Passed out blankets and pillows and what looked like the brown bag lunches Ivy got at school when she went on field trips. Dr. Somerset led Ivy's family over to an empty space near the back wall and helped Mom sit down. "You can get some clothes to change into over there," she said, pointing to the other side of the gym where the clean people were handing stuff out. "There should be some things for the babies, too. I need to check on a few other people, but I'll be back soon."
"Thank you, Dr. Somerset,"
Dad said. He scrubbed his hand over his stubbly chin.
"I don't know how. Thank you."
Dr. Somerset smiled and squeezed his arm. "It'll be okay." He nodded and took a deep breath, like he really believed her. But Ivy knew better. "It'll be okay" was just something people said when they didn't know what else to say, and things were really, really bad. It was exactly what Dad said before they ran for the storm cellar. But no one really knew what would be okay and what wouldn't. Dad mumbled something about finding a phone to call the insurance company while Dr. Somerset started toward another family. June followed, calling out to her. Dr. Somerset stopped and pulled her daughter close, pressing the back of her hand to June's forehead. June shrugged her off and said something Ivy couldn't make out. Dr. Somerset looked up, her weary gaze landing on Ivy, a frown wrinkling her eyebrows. They started walking toward Ivy. Ivy backed up and turned around, placing her pillow next to Mom and kneeling to tickle Aaron's feet. He cooed at her, but it turned into a whine.
"I need to feed them," Mom said.
She dug into the diaper bag and pulled out a burp cloth and a big sheet-like thing that looped around her neck that she used when nursing in public. "Ivy?" Ivy glanced over her shoulder and saw Dr. Somerset. "Are you hurt?" she asked.
No, I'm fine. She's limping," June said.
Ivy glared at her.
"What?"
Mom said, her eyes finding Ivy. She picked up Evan and dipped him under the nursing sheet, cradling him against her chest.
"Honey, what happened?"
"Nothing, I twisted my ankle a little in the cellar. It's not a big deal."
"Why didn't you say anything?"
Mom asked.
"Layla, you didn't see this?"
Layla, who had picked up Aaron, tilted her head at her sister. Ivy looked away. For the past year, Layla was usually the one Ivy went to when she had a headache or cut her toe while playing outside barefoot because she hated putting on shoes. Part of her don't-stress-mom-out plan of action. About a week after Aaron and Evan came home from the hospital, Ivy started her period for the first time. Mom had turned into zombie mom, so Layla got Ivy pads and stood outside the bathroom door, talking her through the whole thing.
"I don't know," Layla said, kissing Aaron's cheek. "I guess Ivy's old enough to look after herself."
There was a tinge of hurt in her voice, but Ivy ignored it. She waited for Mom to disagree with Layla to say that Ivy wasn't that old, because if 12 wasn't old enough to stay up past 9:30 on a school night, then it certainly wasn't old enough to fend for herself in a tornado. But Mom didn't say anything like that. She sighed and peeked at Evan through the neck of the nursing sheet.
"Layla," she said, "why don't you go find us some more blankets and clothes? I'd rather not lay the boys on this dirty floor. And maybe a few granola bars or something."
"Yeah, okay."
Layla glanced at Ivy's ankle one more time before walking away with Aaron.
"Let me take a look,"
Dr. Somerset said. She motioned for Ivy to sit down, and Ivy did, her throat suddenly all thick and annoying. Dr. Somerset untied Ivy's sneaker but didn't take it off. She poked at Ivy's ankle and moved her foot around until Ivy sucked in a sharp breath.
"That hurt?"
Dr. Somerset asked.
"A little."
"Nothing's broken," she said. "It's probably just a sprain. I'm going to wrap it, but leave your shoe on, okay?
If you take it off right now, you might not be able to get it back on until the swelling goes down.
We'll find some ice for it. June, could you?"
"Yes, I can do that,"
June said, weirdly excited, and took off in search of ice. Dr. Somerset started wrapping Ivy's ankle in a beige bandage. She was quick and efficient, and didn't say another word. She was like a rock, while June was all water. 5 minutes later, she finished and left, promising to check back later. Mom rubbed Ivy's back, but her touch was uneven because she kept moving around and adjusting Evan while she nursed. Eventually, Ivy scooted away a little so her mom didn't feel like she had to comfort her. Mom didn't even notice. She didn't notice a lot lately. It could be because Ivy's ankle hurt, but her chest felt tight. Just like it did when she first found out that Mom was pregnant with the twins. She'd been excited at first. Twins! Brothers! Or another sister, maybe two! But then Dad got right down to business, talking about how they all had to play their part and pitch in. Mom was 41 years old, so the pregnancy was what they called high risk. Stress was dangerous. So was exhaustion and heavy lifting. Mom had to stay in bed for the last 2 months of the pregnancy. Ivy was happy to help, but it was hard. She was worried about Mom a lot, and the twins ended up coming early anyway. Since then, she felt like she'd barely seen her mother. It was all twins, all the time, with Ivy's family. When she looked up from her ankle, she saw June jogging back across the gym, bringing Taryn, Ivy's best friend, with her.
Ivy!
Taryn yelled from 10 feet away. She ran over and collapsed next to Ivy. Ivy got a whiff of her peony body lotion, and it smelled so familiar and nice after the smell of dirt and sweat stuck up her nose for the last few hours.
Is your house really gone?
Taryn asked. There was that word again. Gone. Ivy had no clue what she was supposed to say.
Yep, sure is, totally vanished.
Any response felt weird and didn't match up with what was actually happening, so Ivy nodded.
Wow,
Taryn said.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. June frowned at Ivy and handed her a plastic bag full of ice. Ivy took it and pressed it to her ankle, avoiding June's eyes.
Annie Demetrius's house flooded, but it's still in one piece,
Taryn said, craning her neck to look around the gym. Taryn waved at Annie a few families down. She waved back, but didn't smile as she sipped from a foam cup.
Drew is here, too,
Taryn went on.
His house wasn't wiped out, but they can't stay in it right now. The roof is messed up, and they think he broke his arm.
Oh, no, really? Is he okay? Ivy asked. Drew played soccer for their 7th grade team. It was a fall sport, so they were done, but Ivy was pretty sure he played with a local league in the spring. Taryn shrugged and knotted her fingers together. She'd had a crush on Drew Dunaway ever since Ivy and Taryn figured out what crushes were. They sat with him and his friends at lunch sometimes. All he and Taryn ever talked about was soccer and superhero movies. There was nothing wrong with soccer and superhero movies, but Ivy didn't have much to say about them, which left her chewing her turkey sandwiches or doodling on everyone's napkins in silence whenever they sat with him. You can go hang out with Drew if you want, Ivy said.
I said hey to him. He seemed pretty out of it. I think he's on some painkillers and they're making him loopy,
Taryn said, pushing her dark blonde hair over her shoulder. Her straight bangs cut a perfect line across her forehead. Ivy wished she could get away with bangs.
Besides, Taryn said, I need to stay with you. That's why I came by.
She snuggled into Ivy's side, and Ivy couldn't help but smile. Taryn and Ivy had been best friends since the summer before kindergarten, when they met during swimming lessons at the rec center. Taryn flounced over in her bright yellow bathing suit to where Ivy's mom was trying to fit a pair of goggles over Ivy's head of thick hair. Taryn told her she wanted to swim the butterfly. Ivy thought that sounded magical. Swim in the butterfly. Like something out of a fairy tale. It wasn't until years later that Ivy realized Taryn's dad had been a swimmer in college and had taught her the names of all the swimming strokes. That was decidedly less fantastical. But by then, Ivy was hooked on Taryn's bubbly laugh and the way she wrinkled her nose at anyone who made fun of Ivy's poofy hair and freckles.
So what are you going to do?
Taryn asked now, waving at Ivy's mom, who barely managed a weary smile. Of course Taryn would ask this. She was all action. She was a wind-up toy zooming over a hardwood floor.
I don't know, Ivy said.
Where are you going to live?